Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. What's up? Back once again, it is the Incredible in the Black podcast. And in case you weren't aware, this is a podcast dedicated to covering the current events and social issues going on in your Black world and covering it all from the perspective of three grown-ass men who know if you stay ready, you never have to get ready. I am your host, Big O, Mr. In the Black himself, but you know I can never do this alone. Let me introduce the rest of my podcast crew. Crush, say what's up, man.
What's good, everybody?
No doubt. L, say what's up.
Man, no introduction needed. Y'all know who the hell it is up in this joint, man. I ain't got to say a word. Y'all already know who it is. Oh my it's God, your mama's favorite podcaster. What's happening?
We got to the rapper intro level of this podcast.
Yeah. Listen, like, bro. Say less. You know who it is.
Shout out to DJ K Slay.
The favorite flavor rest podcast. You know, I see you. No bullshit.
And it goes to paradise.
I want to make sure that you guys, this is a special edition of the In the Black podcast. This is our Black Light segment. Our Black Light is when we take a deep dive into the people and organizations that deserve the deep dive. And we are excited to have a special guest with us this evening. But before we jump into all of that, if you are following us across YouTube, make sure you hit that thumbs up button. It goes a long way. It's free. We know you guys are cheap, but please do us the favor. Finesse that subscribe so that you don't miss out on the next video. And you can follow us across social media at In the Black PDCST on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. But before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the show, Elgin, tell these folks how they can become part of the family if they want to do that, man.
Man, first, I want to say thank you to all of our patrons, man, who have been supporting us throughout this journey as we continue to build independent Black media. But the way to become a part of that movement, because best believe it is a movement, you can head to our website, www.intheblackpodcast.com. Up in the right-hand corner, you'll see the Become Family tab. Click that joint. There's a number of options on that screen that you can participate in. You can give us money directly, right? Straight to our Cash App, $InTheBlackPDCST. We take that too. You can buy swag. You can buy different shirts. You can buy shirts that actually have the In the Black podcast logo on there. So you can rock that to your favorite event, let people know who you're rocking with. More importantly, you can go down and become a member of our Patreon. Listen. On our Patreon account, man, there's a number of things that you can do. But I want to highlight some of the things that you can receive, right? Because you will get your money's worth, your bang for the buck. The off-the-cuff segment is by far worth every little piece of change that you can scrounge up from the backseat of your 45 Honda. You can do whatever you can do. To become a member of that. But more importantly, again, we really want to thank you guys, man, and shout out to all of our new patrons. I forgot my list with y'all names on it. You know who you are. We'll shout you out better next time. Next, bro?
No doubt. Now, tonight's episode is actually brought to you by Audiobooks Now. So, you know, here at the In the Black podcast, we eat books up. Sometimes it gets a little pricey, but with Audiobooks Now, it's been a lifesaver, unlike some of those other, you know, they won't be named. But if you go to our website, www.intheblackpodcast.com/audiobooks now, you can go ahead and click the link in there and you can get 50% off your first purchase across the entire website. So make sure that you check that out. It is an affiliate link. It won't cost you anything extra, but it helps to keep the lights on. So go ahead and continue to support your boys. Now, like I said, we've got a special guest tonight, man. So our special guest for this evening is a father, a husband, an author, and a motivational speaker. Once a product of the Indiana State foster care system, he's proven that where you come from isn't the limitation to fulfilling your life's purpose. Now he travels the country, continuing to fulfill his purpose by using his life's experiences to help students, parents, and their children bridge the communication gap and become the best versions of themselves. Please help me welcome the author of The Sun Is Always Shining, A Story of Adversity Turned to Triumph, D'Antoine DJ Johnson. DJ, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, my man. Thank you for showing up and being on the show.
Man, I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity.
Man, yes, what an intro. That was a beautiful intro. Well done.
Yeah, man, that was amazing.
he deserves it, unlike some of these. We appreciate you showing up and being on the show, man. No doubt. Now, we are very familiar with you, but I would like for you to introduce yourself to our audience. Please tell us about yourself, man.
Yes, so my name is DeAntoine Johnson. That's my government name, but I love to go by DJ Johnson to keep it simple for the people out there. And I am a person who is, I don't know, I like to say I lead a double life at the moment. Currently, I work full time at Fox on the sports side for the show Speak for Yourself with Marcellus Wiley and Emmanuel Acho. But the other side of me is DJ Inspires LLC, which I'm a school counselor as well. And so I work in the schools with students, teens, high schoolers, in individual and group counseling, but I also do like parenting workshops and parenting groups, working with parents to try to help them better communicate with their teens. So that's me in a nutshell.
You caught me off guard with that whole speak for yourself thing.
Yes.
I think we were discussing it briefly off air. You know that I have a love-hate relationship with that show. I enjoy how they break down the material, but I'm not necessarily behind the ideals, I guess, that they both hold. Now, given where that show is hosted from or who owns the show and the hosts, are you coming from a conservative background? I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but I'm trying to get an understanding of how you, I guess, where you're leading, I guess, for lack of a better description.
No, definitely don't have a conservative background.
Okay.
And you know, it's so funny, like when I say I work at Fox, people always think of Fox News, but it really is like a completely different thing. Fox News is I think they're in New York or based in New York or something like that.
Yeah.
We work out of LA and the studio is strictly sports and it's pretty diverse in there, especially on our show. We got a lot of Black folk that work on that show. Makes sense. So we got two Black hosts. But I'm not conservative, not the least bit. I could work the show and do my job and do what I'm supposed to do without like being drawn in
to the
conservative views. But you know who hosted the show before Emmanuel?
That's what I was going to ask you, sir. Host Blaylock.
What I'll say from Whitlock is that I think what he did for me is just have me look at the world, just question everything, question the side that I believe in and question the side that, you know, I don't agree with. And so he's one of the people I still follow on Twitter because I believe in following people I completely disagree with on occasion. I gotta learn to see where they come from, see their perspective, and I can still be like, oh, you know, I don't agree. And not hate them. Yeah. You know, I think that's what's part of our society is where we get it wrong, where we feel like, oh, I don't agree with them, so I hate them. It's like, no, you can disagree and not hate.
No doubt. Go ahead, Al. I know you've been burning for
Listen,
a minute.
Man,
go ahead,
I this is DJ has been one of the people that I have been following on Twitter and other social media platforms for a while now. The realm that he's navigating, this gentle parenting, conscious parenting realm, which goes countercultural to pretty much the way that most Black folks were raised, is a predominantly white woman's space, right? And it's a predominantly a woman's space. To have a Black man speak in the capacity that he does, very bluntly, very directly, very challenging, very provoking of thoughts and feeling, which I think he does intentionally. DJ, that'd be my first question. Yeah. Being in this particular field, which is predominantly female, how do you navigate that realm in that? Do you associate with others? How do you do your thing in that space as a Black male?
Yeah, I think, because, you know, anytime I feel like society, the way, at least in our culture, anytime you're not parenting and not even even when you're not, like, when you're parenting and not hitting your kid is what I'm trying to say. It comes off as something that's a white thing. Like, oh, you're not hitting your kids. That's white stuff. But I would challenge, you know, the audience out there to say, what if I said hitting our kids is a white thing? What if I said that, you know, where it came from, we could, you know, pinpoint slavery, but the idea of it is oppression, right? Sure. Let's just go back to slavery. Like, there was a point to which they were trying to keep the slaves in line and do certain things and let them know who is in charge. And I think when we think about spanking, when we think about hitting, the idea, if we really want to be real, is our parents establishing the fact that they're in charge. Not necessarily like trying to get our child to be the best version of themselves, but we want them to follow rules. We want them to be in line. We like to say we don't want them to get killed. So we want to hurt them and make them feel a certain way in our home. And so for me, it didn't even, like, I the crazy thing is I wasn't even really posting parenting related stuff until I think about 2019, 2020. I have been working in this space. I've been working with students since 2009, started in an after-school setting with the elementary age kids. And then I started working with high schoolers in 2014. And really my work with the students is really what shaped kind of the work that I do on social media in terms of trying to defend kids and have us see them in a different light. What's so crazy about one of the, I guess, things that people like always try to tell me about, you know, the gentle parenting way is that this is the reason why kids are wilding out now. And I'm like, no, you really want to do the math. Yeah. Like 10 years ago in 2012, they did a study and 70%, more than 70% of those parents said, oh yeah, I would hit my kid. That was 10 years ago. So we doing the math. Yeah. Those kids are in the fourth, fifth grade now. Like, so it's still prevalent. I think there was even another study about parents who said they would hit their toddlers like two and over or whatever it might be. And so if there's a dominant parenting style, that is still authoritative, which is listen to what I say, do as I say. Children should be seen as not and not heard, and children should be hit. I you talk about my post, Mr. Catch, and what one of the posts I had posted was, let's look at some of the issues and problems that y'all say we have with our society. Anger, frustration, drug and alcohol abuse, all these different things. Do y'all know that those are side effects of the authoritarian parenting style? So how, if we only have a few people practicing gentle parenting, is how can we broadly contribute that to the issues that we see with our kiddos?
Yeah.
So for me, learning and now getting into the space where I'm connecting with other parents and I'm starting to learn, like, whoa, I have been doing this work with students based off of what I've been seeing from students, like real life action. Later is when I got education and started following these IG accounts and other parenting accounts where I started to put the pieces together, like, oh, it all makes sense to me now. Been my motivation to like be in this parenting space, especially as a Black man, especially as, you know, there's not too many males in this space, not just
you're right about and that
it's for me. I know that my voice resonates because there's a view that I think I'm supposed to have, and for me it's like, no, we gotta love kids and we gotta treat kids better.
It goes countercultural. One of the things when you mentioned the data, it was this one, I can't remember the report exactly, but someone did a report on asking prison inmates who were in jail for severe crimes, you know, how many of them were spanked and, you know, I call abuse before they got into prison. And over, I think it was like 70 to 80% of them were, because that's the logic, right? The logic is, if we spank and hit our children, we're going to keep them away from prison.
This is
right, but the data shows the exact opposite, that that is not the way things work.
Yeah.
Let's get to the crux of this, man. Yeah. I think that a majority of this, outside of the portion of oppression that you've already described, right?
Yeah.
A lot of this, especially in the Black community, resonates from a biblical or maybe a misconstrued biblical understanding of child rearing. Yeah. How do you talk to parents that are trying to be biblically sound, love themselves from Jesus, child, and trying to raise their children? How do you have that conversation with them?
Being a Christian, I wanted to really do a deep dive into that particular scripture. I don't think it exactly says. There might be one version of the Bible that I don't even subscribe to as far as a version that I would read of the Bible that says exactly that. But most of the versions pretty much say, like, if you withhold discipline, then you are spoiling your child. And if we think of the rod in the term that it was used in that particular scripture, rod was used to guide the sheep and keep them from danger and you know, get them to where they needed them to go. They wasn't beating the sheep. They wasn't hurting the sheep with the rod. And so it's so crazy for people to, you know, misconstrue what that verse was. And more importantly, I think the big issue that keeps happening in our community is that people keep saying there's no discipline in the world. Like these kids don't get discipline these days. No, I think what you're really trying to say is that there's no punishment. So like when we think of discipline, for me, I'm thinking about my own life. Like for me to be disciplined, you know, I'm making sure that I get up early for my workouts. I'm making sure that when I'm trying to drop a couple of pounds that I'm watching what I'm eating. I'm making sure I'm disciplined in my work, making sure I get to work on time. Like that's the type of discipline we ultimately want our kids to have and have for themselves. And so when we think of discipline, it's teaching them so that they can change future behavior. Punishment is, I need to make you suffer for what you did wrong now. Focusing on past behavior. Discipline in the purest form and how it should be focuses on future behavior because we want a changed behavior in the future. Punishment is like, I need to make you suffer for the past behavior that you did, not necessarily a conversation about how we move forward. So for me, I tell parents, look, like, even if you want to subscribe and say spare the rod, spoil the child, for me, I feel like that was in the Old Testament. And so what I've been learning about the Bible is that some of the there's a new kind of way of being as a Christian when Jesus
came. When the New Testament comes on board.
Yes.
No, you're right.
Exactly. And so for me, I'm like, okay, what would Jesus do? We used to ask that as a kid, but I'm like, really, what would Jesus do?
Yeah,
if we ask Jesus right now, would he say, oh, beat your kid? I would say,
hold up, DJ, take a step back.
Yeah.
I know you hear this all the time, so I want to hear what your response is. I got a beating as a kid.
Yep.
I turned out
fine.
You didn't. My mom got beatings.
No, you didn't.
I got a beating. Like, so what's the big issue?
Of course, you know, I love when people say that. And I want to ask y'all, like, have y'all ever heard people who got spanked as a kid say, like, they turned out great? I always hear fine. I always hear all
it's
right.
It's always fine. I turned out all right. Never great. Outstanding. Yeah.
And so for me, if we think about what the intent of hitting and spanking our kids is, it's to oppress. I need you to fall in line with the things that I need you to do in my house. I need you to listen. I need you to respect me. And ultimately what that becomes is an employee who is respectful, who listens, who stays in a job for, I don't know, I don't want to poo-poo on anybody, but I'm just trying to show how it connects. If we are oppressive in our home, we end up raising a child who ultimately becomes an adult who might be oppressed in a specific job where they stay there until they get retirement. And then all of a sudden they're looking back at their life like, what happened?
Wow, that's a very interesting analogy.
You know, so funny, like I didn't start having conversations about purpose until my 20s. Like, I didn't have conversations about purpose when I was a kid. It was about listening, following rules, ultimately getting a good job someday that's going to pay the bills, that's going to give you good insurance. Like, there's more to life than that. And you got a lot of people who are saying that they're fine, who are really living unhappy lives, that are upset. You know, anytime I posted a post recently on my Facebook that went viral, like literally almost 600,000 people seen this post. And what it said, simply, it just repeated, you didn't deserve to be hit as a child. And in my caption, I was like, yo, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you. You know, about 25% of the people responded to that. Like, I did. The things that I did, like, But it, their response was out of
the justifications of it. Yeah, yeah, I dig it. I dig it.
And I'm like, even if y'all were trying to convince me that spankings were good, you being angry and that. Frustrated with me, I don't want that.
Doesn't do it. Okay, I mean, and Crush, I want you to jump into as someone who's getting into the parenting field, right?
Is that the quotation mark? Getting into? Is that what you're doing?
hey, I'm not dictating what that dude does in his sheet, so I'm minding my business. No, but how do you have that conversation with parents, with adults? Yeah. Black adults who have been carrying this generational, and I use that softly, right? This generational curse of this spanking since as long as they can remember, right? Because it's very difficult to try or to exude new behavior when this old behavior is such a, not just a part of you, but a part of your culture. How do you have that conversation?
I wanted to say not just a part of the culture, right, but also a part of the world society, because we live in a very punitive, retributive society. Yeah. So I wanted to add that part on. DJ, so how do you have that conversation with folks?
All they know. I unfortunately don't work with as many Black families as I would like to. The nature of where I live, I work mainly with Latino families, which I've learned that they have a similar way of how they deal with their kids. But you know, when I do have an opportunity to talk to Black families, and usually it's my friends or people that might go to my church, I'm able to kind of hold space for kind of what that is. Because I think we get into a space where I have in my notes, growing up, we couldn't ask questions, right? Even if it didn't make sense to us, we couldn't question authority. We couldn't question our parents. We couldn't say why. We could, like, we get smacked across the face, right? And so what that ultimately becomes is an adult who won't question even their past or even question the things that are happening for them today. And so for me, I have to ask the questions, and I challenge parents when I'm asking them the question. I said, by parenting that way, who does it ultimately serve? Does it serve you? Does it serve a greater thing that was put into place to keep us a certain way? Like, we always joke about, oh, little Timmy. And it's like, you know, we laugh about the way little Timmy was raised, but I bet little Timmy feels empowered to start establishing business. I bet little Timmy feels empowered to do certain things in his lives where we, in our Black and brown community, if I can add them to the fold, like,
sure, please.
They have issues in school where they won't even, like, let's say they're failing class. They're afraid to talk to their teachers because you in your house said, oh, kids should be seen and not heard, or get out of grown folks' conversations. So you're not even giving them a practice of conversation between an adult and a child. But hey, you are the first adult in your child's life. Why not give them that practice when they do go out into the world and practice? So for me, it's about asking questions. Like, questions that I felt like we weren't allowed to ask when we were kids. Like, why are you hitting me? This hurts. Yeah. Like, I know people were like, oh, spanking and hitting is different. I know I put in my notes, like, I don't differentiate between spanking and hitting. It's all the same, because the brain doesn't go. It's, we have a flight, fright, or freeze response in our brain. Right. Yeah. And so if I'm being threatened in any way, whether it's a tap or worse, it's all the same in my brain of like, oh. But what happens in our brain, I believe, is we get to a point where, you know what, this hurts me. It doesn't feel good. But because the person that loves me is doing it, it's okay. So my brain tells me that it's okay. And ultimately what that becomes is I get into relationships. And when I get hit in relationships, oh, it's okay. They love me. So for me, it's asking questions, because if we look at how it's done, how we've been parenting, it don't make sense. It don't make sense to raise healthy, thriving young people. For me, we've raised people up that are not thriving. Really, we're surviving. So when people say they're fine, they really should be saying I'm surviving.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Crush.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I completely understand the religious context behind this kind of parental punishment, but it had me thinking, like what Elgin implied, you know, I had to wonder if this kind of punishment in our society was more or less an outgrowth of being a capitalist society, where in order to just maintain your existence, you know, and to, especially within a family structure, this kind of punishment was probably the most quote unquote convenient and efficient.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Per the demands of everything else in your life.
Yeah.
You do, like, because what you're asking them to do is the right thing to do, but it's also much harder. It involves actual discipline, because discipline is instilled, not inflicted.
Exactly. And it, such a good point. Go ahead.
Oh, because I mean, growing up, I had to, you know, give credit to my father. He never hit me. Mm-hmm. And
that's wow. I don't say wow like disparagingly, so please don't take it wrong. But I'm thinking like every ethnic, as me as a Nigerian American, Crush as a Caribbean American, it is almost by second nature for ethnic parents to not be afraid, whether you're, I know some adults now that their parents are, you know, in my parents' age range, and they still not afraid to give their kid a good pop when they talking to him. So to hear him say that his dad never put a hand on him, I'm like, that's groundbreaking in and of itself.
Ironically, I have a younger sister though. And my mother did spank her once. However, it did not stop this later 6-year-old child from painting her ceiling green.
Yeah.
That did not stop her at all.
You said something important that I wanted to touch on, and that is parenting being hard. And I always say, it's like my favorite saying when I work with parents is, parenting is not hard because of our crumb snatching kids. Parenting is hard because of the energy, the effort that it takes to be the best parent that you need to be for your child. And so, man, Shock said it, or Crest said it perfectly. Like, the reason why we ultimately are not parenting this way, the reason why we keep making excuse, the reason why we keep calling it a white person thing, because to really do this work the way it's intended,
it's hard.
It's too much work. So people say, it was hard for me to spank my kid. Like, no, it's easy. Like, my son is wilding out this week. Like, I wish I could just, because that's easy. It's been about, I always tell parents, if you're taking notes, like, for me, the way that I respond to behaviors, whether it be teens, whether it be my 5-year-old or about to be 5-year-old son, is that I don't respond out of anger and frustration anymore. At least I try to. But the majority of the time, I respond out of curiosity. Like, I'm asking myself questions of, like, what's going on? Like, what's behind? Like, did he have a tough day at school? Like, I'm going through, is he hungry? Because, you know,
is he hungry?
He has, I forget the exact term, but he has eating issues. And that's another thing. Like, I have a post that I haven't posted yet, but it's something
nutrition.
I've been thinking about. We would get mad at our kids for certain things that turns out to be developmental, or turns out, like, I used to get in trouble for not finishing my food, right? Like, and so my son, there's a lot of times where he doesn't finish his food. There's a lot of times where we try to get him to eat something he won't. Mm. Well, it's called a food. He has a food aversion. So, like, it's something that's there for him that keeps him from eating food the way that we eat food. Sure, and so we had to have him in therapy. But I imagine that when he was younger and he was having those issues at first, how it would have turned out if I just hit him and hopefully he start eating what he's supposed to. So for me, be curious about our kids' behavior, like, go through the developmental track. And this is why I feel like we need to learn.
Please say that again. Goodness gracious.
There's so much behind kids' behaviors. Like, it could be, like I said, development. It could be whether they ate. It could be you scared them. It could be so many different things. And so for us to be in a space as parents where we're curious and we're trying to figure things out, ultimately thinking of the long run, right? Parenting, I think in the Black community, we want parenting to be a sprint. We want parenting to be easy. We want
a grueling marathon.
Why would I ever complain about my kids not wanting to talk to me? If I beat the shit out of them.
We don't even understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't understand that at all.
Exactly.
And that's part of it, right? We don't understand that. We don't understand that the behaviors that we're demonstrating to our kids as young are seeds that are going to be developed when they get older. You may never see the harvest. Somebody is going to see the harvest, right?
Yeah.
Somebody else is going to experience that.
And you hope it bears one thing good fruit.
I'm constantly saying to people, because it took me a while to get to the point where I felt like spanking and corporal punishment and hitting and all those things and punishment were all the same thing. I don't separate. I don't delineate between them. I don't do any of that, you know, mental gymnastics. But the one thing I often say to people is, if we treated adults the same way we treated and responded to children, most of y'all would be in jail right now. You can't use the same logic that you use with children in defense of domestic violence. You can't use the same logic in those, because you can't say I hit her because she wouldn't pick up and clean the kitchen. But we can do that to a small defensive child and have some kind of justification for that. But the one thing I wanted to get your thoughts on was the eating component. Because I think that's one of the areas where parents really struggle when it comes to children's behavior, right? Because most of us work. We work horrible jobs that really don't appreciate us. We come home and have to do similar responsibilities at the house. We want to prepare a meal that our kids are just going to wolf down and eat without complaint and get up and move away. So a lot of the discipline things that I often see take place is at the dinner table, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. What are some of your thoughts around that aspect, how we discipline and how we cultivate a autonomous environment for our children at mealtime?
I think it really depends on your specific household. Let's start there. But more importantly, like, and I think this is one of my tips that I was going to give earlier, but like, how do we deal with the things that come up for us as parents? So for usually if something upsets us about our kids, it's usually a trigger that we have from something in our past. So a lot of times it's, you know, we don't waste food here because maybe you're in a situation where wasting food is a big, you know, that's a big deal. And you don't bring in as much money as you would like. And it's an issue. But for me, it's ultimately like, okay, figuring out how y'all can work together as a kid. And I know that's so hard for so many people, like work together with a kid is a kid. Like, yeah. But for me, I see a kid as a human being. I see a kid as a person who is just needing to have space held for them to become the adult that we ultimately want them to be, no matter what age they are. And you mentioned autonomy, like as early as two, kids are looking for some type of autonomy in their lives. And oh, forget about when they're teens, because they absolutely at that point they have some autonomy at that point, but are looking for even more as a teen. And so when I think about the eating aspect, it's just for me, like I try really hard not to have like these power battles, power struggles with my kid. Like I always get on parents about I'm the parent, like having to express the fact that they're a parent. Like, what does that mean? Show me though. Like, show me in your actions that you're the parent. Because really a lot of the work that we do as parent really comes from our modeling, because our kids are watching us. They're hearing what we're saying. So they are more apt to follow your lead through your actions than they are than what you say to them. Especially I remind parents all the time, like if you're constantly bringing your kid down, meaning you're always pointing out their flaws, always telling them what they did wrong, always telling them that they're not good enough, like I'm going to tune that voice out just like you would if an adult or anybody else was telling you those things. For me, I challenge parents to have even conversations, right? So a lot of times our conversations, you're the parent up here talking to the child down here. But how, like, we need to make sure that we're having even conversations, especially as your kid gets older, so that they know I can come, even though I know my mom is going to get on me if I do something wrong, I can at least come to her during emergencies when I really need them the most. And I think ultimately we in the Black community in particular have this saying where I'm not going to be friends with my kid. You got to be something to him.
No, you're good. Let me ask you this question, man. As we described in the beginning of the show, you did spend a portion of your childhood in the foster system. How much of that part of your life affected this way of thinking or this methodology that you've come up with now?
The part of my childhood that is so like loud in my brain is the trauma that I was that I experienced before I got into foster care. Honestly, foster care was, thankfully, I was in kinship care, which I ended up staying with family members, extended family members. And so prior to foster care, I had a life or a childhood. There's a study called the Adverse Childhood Experience. It's basically there's 10 like themes.
The ACEs test.
Yep, ACEs, yep. There's 10 things that they, you know, test you for, like it's emotional abuse, physical abuse, all the, you had a parent go to jail, you had a parent have a mental illness, all these different things, right? By the time I was in middle school, I had experienced all 10 of those things on that test. And to give y'all context, you're like, oh, 10 is the highest that you can get, one. Yeah. The other thing is, if you score a 6 or higher on this test, what they found is the lifespan, your lifespan could be can potentially be shortened by 20 years.
Yeah.
And on top of that, a 4 or higher, I believe, subjects you to drug and alcohol abuse, all these other things and problems that we see. And so you hear people say, oh, I turned out fine, but they have a drug issue, or they abuse alcohol. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, did you know?
Yeah.
And and for me, a lot of the conversations with parents is coming to grips with our past. Because I think when we question our past, it says, oh, our parents were bad. Well, two things can be true. Your parents didn't meet your full needs as a child, and they did the best that they could.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. 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 And I think that's the trauma component, right? When we begin to actually understand trauma and how trauma literally changes your biology within your body, and it affects that fight, flight, or freeze when you see so much violence in our community. And again, I don't want anybody to think that we're just picking on our community, saying that our community doesn't have the ability to regulate themselves. As with anything, there's context, and the trauma component is crucial to understanding all of that criminalized conservative right-wing data that is put out there. If you don't add trauma to it, you're going to think we're savages. You're going to think we're a beast. But if you add the trauma component, and I think about my parents all the time. Like, I have a older daughter who's 25, and then I, because I'm crazy, I have a 7, 4, and 3 at home, right? So this is a huge gap. I spanked my 25-year-old, right? I don't spank my kids at all. Like, that's not even within the realm of thinking in a conversation.
That's also because you're tired, though. you ain't got the energy for all that.
No. I still get to run. Don't do that. But my older daughter often will reference the way that I disciplined her, and she's excited that I don't do that with my younger kids. But I had to do the work to address what I did to her, right? I think that's the component. So when you're doing your work and parents are coming out of that mindset of thinking that spanking is the way, what are some of the things that you can help them, some tips you can provide for parents who no longer want to do that, but still want to grow and strengthen a relationship with their children?
I said, I don't know what I fully subscribe to in parenting. I know you mentioned gentle. I know you mentioned conscious. But all I know is I want to keep my hands to myself, one, and I want to make sure that I don't parent out of fear. And the fear that my child will be a failure, fear that my child will be killed, fear that they will be disrespectful to some adults out there. I try my best not to parent out of fear. So we'll start there, right? And I think as a parent who's fresh, they're like, you know what? I hear these brothers, they talking good. I want to try to stop hitting my kids. Start with writing down why you have all these different fears and why you feel like you hit in the first place. Was it passed down? Do you really truly feel like it worked for you? I want to ask you, what did you not get as a child that you wish you did? Like, before the trauma, you know, glazed your memory and made you feel like you deserve what you got as a child. Like, try to remember what you really wanted. Was there a conversation that you wish you had? Was there some bonding or connection that you wish you had? Like, for me, we say in the parenting world, connection before correction. There is no correction that you can give to a child without connecting with them. And people ask me, man, I don't understand how you're so good with working with teens. I connect with them. And once I have a connection with them, then we can. So Then I have students that are in the hallway not doing something that they're supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? So I say, hey, what's up, man? And because that connection is there, they're like, oh, my bad, DJ. You know, I'll do better next time, right? Because they want to do it because of the connection that we created. I think what we've done in our parenting style, maybe inadvertently, we're not realizing it, that we have severed the connection, one, every time we smack and hit our kids, but two, every time we told them that their voice didn't matter, that their feelings didn't matter.
Yeah.
So if you tell me those three things on a consistent basis, of course I'm gonna be an adult and not want to talk to you as a child. You know what I mean?
I think we've done a very good job of tackling this conversation about corporal punishment, but I think one of the elements of parenting that's probably the most, one of the negative elements of parenting that we haven't really tackled is the verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. Right? In the very beginning of the show, we talked about the biblical aspects of it. The Bible says that the tongue is as deadly as a sword.
Oh, right? Yeah. If you follow the Bible, right? Let's follow it for real.
Right. And I think that there's a lot of people that, I mean, it's a new aged element to think about it, but there are a lot of parents that are either not beating their children, straying away from that, but being that parent that can basically say whatever you want, quote unquote, to your kids, that's a deeper, more rooted trauma that you can't shake. You can shake off a beating. Scars, physical scars heal, right? Yep. But there are things that people will, and I'll give you a quick example. I have an aunt of mine. Her parents, she's damn near 60 years old, okay? And her parents in Nigeria, they never beat her. But one of the most traumatic portions of her childhood was the relationship she had with her mom. She said that her mom could say things to her that almost at one point when she was a teenager, she damn near committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And this is a woman that never raised her hand to her, but always knew how to push those buttons, knew what to say. How do you have that conversation with adults to have genuine, open, transparent conversations with their children? And I want to specify that again. Open and honest, transparent conversations with their children. How do you have that conversation?
You said it yourself. I remind parents, life and death is in the power of the tongue. And so like, you working with me as a parent, one of the first things I'm making sure that you do is make sure that we're not speaking death over our kids. Your voice as a parent becomes your child's inner voice as they get older. I'm gonna say that again. Your voice as a parent to your child becomes their inner voice as they get older. And so think about some of the things that you slip up and say to your kids, and if whether or not you want that to be their inner voice as they get older. And for me, like, speaking to our kids in certain lights, like I'm gonna put the, you know, PSA out there, like, parenting is hard. We said that earlier, but more importantly, stop trying to be perfect. Stop trying to be a perfect parent. That doesn't exist. You're not going to get it right. You're not. I used to hate when parents would expect certain things out of you and be tore from the flow up themselves. You want me to be damn near perfect and your ass over here like not perfect?
For me, that'll preach.
I'd rather not fake the funk and pretend like I got my stuff together when I'm trying to force my kid to be a certain way. And I'd rather say, look, I messed up. I yelled at you. My bad. I apologize. Yes, I apologize to my kid. Yes, I apologize to my son. Yes, I apologize to the students I work with. If I mess up, I'm going to own up to it. If I'm not meeting the standard, I model what it looks like to get back on track. And that becomes the lesson for the kid as opposed to pretending like I got it all together. So when we talk about talking to our kids, like, be real with them. Because the reality is, you're an adult. You mess up. You make mistakes. Okay? Help them learn and mess
not
up.
Do
and
the same
mistakes.
Thing. Do you think that the biggest part? And I'm asking all of you. Okay. Do you think that the biggest part that all of this, the corporal punishment, the verbal abuse, that it stems from, is, and maybe not 100%, but where that it stems from, a fear of failing as a parent? Because you don't want your kids to go out into the world and they think that either that one, you're a bad parent, or two, to see your child get into a situation whereby you can't rescue them from, right? Do you think that that's where it stems from, the failure, fear of being a failure as a parent?
In a warped sense.
Yeah. I think a lot of the parents that I work with are, they don't want to have a failing student because it feels, they feel like it's an indictment of them as the parent. That's and the, I always remind them, like, you know, your kid does the work. Like, they are responsible for doing what they're supposed to do. If they fail, that's their failure. If right. you did your part, if you did what you were supposed to do as the parent, wipe your hands of it. Okay, kid, you want to be a failure? That's on you. Just know that I'm here to support you when you don't want to be a failure again, right? So I remind parents, don't take on your child's failures. In fact, let them fail. That's a very important way
Please.
For them to learn and grow and be the best. I'd say some of my favorite students are students who've been super behind in credits, and they were able to figure out a way to graduate, whether they went to continuation school, maybe they took extra credits, they did credit recovery, they did all these things to ultimately graduate. I feel like they are more prepared for life than the kids who just kind of, you know, got straight A's or B's or whatever it might be, because they fail, figured out a way to get back up. And that lesson, I feel like, is going to carry them as they go through many different situations in life where it's going to where they're going to need to be have adversity.
Do you think that?
And I think the fear component is huge, right? Yeah. But I also cannot deny the conditioning that we get on a daily basis to be punitive towards each other. We have been conditioned on every aspect in every way. If you don't do well at your job, you get fired. Yep. You have disciplinary, you get school, you get suspended at school. You commit a crime, you go to jail. There's not grace and mercy in anything that we do. TV shows, movies, it's all punitive and retributive. So that conditions us. When you're doing this type of parenting, you're going against a whole culture that is telling you in every form of fashion, your kids are screwed up in school, IEP, extras. It's just everything is conditioned. So it's that fear component and the conditioning. It's hard to break that, man.
But you don't think there's also a cultural portion of it that's tied to, and I know it's a catchphrase in most instances, but that's tied to white supremacy? Because as DJ's breaking it down, right, it's like, okay, we as black parents, we are so closely tied to the results of our children because American culture tells us collectively the failure of one of us is the failure of all of us. All of us have to account for one another. Whereas with white folks, it's boys will be boys. And kids will have their issues.
I think that's part of it, though.
I think to be individuals.
We're having a black conversation about this in a black context.
Yeah.
But to open it further, we got to make sure that we understand white folks is out here whipping their kids on the same level, if not more, than what we're doing. We're doing it for different reasons, for the most part, as a protective survival twisted, right? Yeah. They're doing it typically out of anger because they don't know how to regulate themselves. So that distinction, it's wild out in these streets. DJ, sorry.
To your point, like, another thing that I talk to parents about is, let's say this world is as crazy and chaotic as we make it out to be. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, let's just kind of paint that picture.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want your house to be the safest place that your child is? Like, why wouldn't you want the home to be the safest space it could be? And what I mean by space, safe to make mistakes, safe to have their voice heard, safe to have their feelings validated. Like, why wouldn't you want that to be the safe space? Like, I remember as a kid growing up, the safest space for me was at school because I didn't want to be at home. Yeah. I would stay at school as long as I could before I went home because I knew that that place didn't feel safe.
That's good.
So I need for parents out there, at the very least, like, I know that you feel like this, I got to protect from the world, I got to do this. Like, the best way that you could protect them is hold space for them in your home. Safe to make mistakes, as I said, safe to have their voice heard, and safe to have their feelings validated. Start there. Start with that connection. See if things don't change for you.
So as a kid, where was y'all's safe space? DJ mentioned his. Mm-hmm. Where was yours? Mine was the comic book shop. Because I can go into a comic book shop and fantasize about other worlds and superheroes and things along those lines. I can be me in a comic book shop. Where was yours, Owen Crush? Where was your safe place as a kid?
Man, I guess similar to yours, you know, comic book store, video games, you know. But I felt safe at home though. I felt safe. I didn't really.
Right on. That's what's up.
And,
Yeah, that's what we want.
It was my sister that was getting the beating. She was wilding out.
I bet you her story is a lot different than what you're telling. So,
where was yours?
I was a witness.
I was a witness. You got it too, indirectly. Where was yours at, bro?
To be very honest with you, I don't know if I necessarily had a safe spot. I tried to wherever I could escape, I escaped to. And I won't say that my situation was as bad as DJ. I would never say that. Mm-hmm. But I never wanted to be in the house. So I found sports. I found maybe the library, something like that. And I would be away. As soon as I was able, all jokes aside, as soon as my mom gave me the dollar ten I needed for my bus pass and the 50 cents to make a phone call at the payphone, I tried as much as possible not to be home if I could help it, man. So
I can dig it.
DJ, we want to say thank you for being on and just dropping jewels for us. We cannot say thank you enough. Before we get you out of here, please tell the good folks where they can find you if they'd like to find you, man.
Yeah, so the parenting goodness dropping of gems can be found at DJ Inspires Parenting on IG, as well as DJ Inspires Purposeful Parenting on Facebook. And just connect, you know, if you heard something on here and you need more questions or you just need, wait, if I can't help you, I got some folks, you know, that can probably get you across the finish line as well. So even if it ain't me, reach out so we can get you connected to somebody. Cause there's people, there's some amazing Black folk out here who are encouraging folks to stop hitting their kids basically, but really, you know, prioritizing connection with our kiddos so that we can ultimately have them thriving and not just surviving. So, and incredible. Then DJinspires.com and yeah.
Incredible. Crush. Where can people find you if they want to find you, man?
Man, you can find me on Instagram as usual at SP Methods.
No doubt. L, where can folks find you if they want to find you, man?
Man, you can find me everywhere at Elgin Bailey. Yeah, come through.
And I'm Big O, Mr. In the Black himself. You can find me on both Twitter and on Instagram at MR_InTheBlack. And I want to thank you guys for joining us for another incredible episode of the In the Black podcast. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you chose to kick it with us, and we appreciate it. Shout out once again to the incredible Antoine DJ Johnson. Thank you for being on the show. We can't say thank you enough. Make sure you follow us across social media at In the Black PDCST, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Come on over and become a member of the family. Join our Patreon. You will not regret it. But until next time, as always, informed, intelligent, In the Black.
In the Black.
Peace.
All right.